Around the world, people are working to bring a greater sense of balance to the planet. Earth Wisdom Circles is here to showcase these people and projects. Now, here's your host for Earth Wisdom Circles on Empower Radio, Elaine Grohman.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Elaine Grohman on Empower Radio and Earth Wisdom Circles. And today I have the honor of introducing a friend of mine in the work that she is doing. Her name is Kim Langbecker, and she is the executive director of Sacred Fire Foundation, an organization that helps to bring the indigenous wisdom of our elders around the world so that we can begin to understand our immediate impact and our immediate connection, I should say, to the living world and the wisdom that they have held, which we deeply need right now. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you so much, Elaine. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us about the Sacred Fire Foundation, what they do, and what it is that they're hoping to expand globally.
Well, the foundation really is exactly what you talked about, is helping to support this indigenous wisdom that has been around for literally thousands and thousands of years. Currently, there's about 370 million indigenous people managing about 80% of the Earth's biodiversity. So that's everything from the rainforest to the Kalahari Desert to, you know, the Amazon, whatever you might, you know, whatever, wherever there's biodiversity, however you want to look at that, those are people that have traditionally been managing those spaces. So they have a really innate understanding of how to live with the world as opposed to fighting against it. I was recently with a gentleman named Tom Porter, who's a Mohawk elder, and he really kind of put it in perspective that indigenous peoples really work in stewardship with, as opposed to what we've been taught in the Western culture of dominance over our world. And there's a big difference with that. And it's kind of gotten us into the troubles that we're currently experiencing. So our work really is around three very specific areas: creating awareness through our events, Voices of Wisdom. We just had one in Greensboro, North Carolina, where we brought two elders there from the First Nations in Canada, and through our media program. And then we have a grant program called Protecting the Sacred, where we work with Indigenous communities around the world. So it may be around preservation of language, it may be around preservation of ceremonies, dance, traditional agriculture, whatever it may be. And then we have an award that we give out every year to one elder, which is really, really difficult because there's so many elders around the world doing amazing work in their communities, but it's a lifetime achievement award called the Wisdom Treasure Award. And so those are the three main areas that we focus on and what we do.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Kim. And can you please tell us a little bit about, you know, what is in the wisdom that you have been able to glean in your conversations with various elders around the world? What is their most common concern, or what are they saying we need to do first and foremost? I know that's
a
big question.
You know, that's a big question. That's a really big question. I think it's really getting back to an understanding of how to live in a sacred way. There are some folks that are really trying to bring back the kind of rituals and ceremonies that we all used to participate in, but we've really sort of gotten away with that from that because life, right? We live in a modern world, so those things don't seem to carry the kind of importance perhaps that they did, 100 years ago. And that really is one of the areas where if you have any opportunity to listen to what the indigenous people are really talking about, it's that interconnectedness, that interdependence, that sense of community that we have things like Facebook and Twitter and all those things that are quote unquote building community, but yet we're so disconnected. We don't have that kind of a relationship with each other. We live in a very fear-based society. So when it's very easy to other, someone that we don't understand or that doesn't look like us or doesn't speak like us. But yet at the same time, those are all really valuable perspectives. So it's, you know, being able to transform the world that we live in into one where we really understand that we're really dependent on each other. So that wisdom is separate from us, that Indigenous wisdom is actually intrinsic to our own survival. And we have to, it's a give and take. It's not just them telling us what we need to do, but it's also us bringing our best to the table, our own knowledge, and really creating innovative ways for us to work together and to support each other.
Kim, thank you for that, for sharing that. And I want to ask you a question because I think so many people in our listening audience, and since this is ultimately going to be a podcast, it is, you know, it can be listened anywhere in the world and certainly touch many lives, but many people in the Western culture have a misunderstanding of what ritual and ceremony means because we have kind of a religious connotation to it, you know, that you have a quote unquote sacrament or something that has to be done in a particular way. Can you help us understand what is the uniqueness of ceremony versus what most people in a religious frame of mind might think of as a ceremony?
Well, it's really depending on which culture you're talking about. It's absolutely unique to each one of those. So, for instance, I'll use some of my Native American friends who, when they are planting, they have a particular prayer that they offer to the Creator. They don't, it's not necessarily something that's religious to them. It's more of a spiritual kind of connection to something greater than themselves. So they may offer a prayer when they plant. They may offer a prayer when they sow. They may offer a prayer when they bring the community together to share what they have reaped. And so there is this understanding that, you know, Tom Porter actually put it really succinctly is, you know, we were sitting up in the Catskills and beautiful, it was August and it was gorgeous and green. And he was looking around and there was a river not far. And he said, you know, the trees, they don't need us. The river, she doesn't need us. The birds, the plants, all of these things, they don't need us, but we need them. We need to respect the world that we live in and have an understanding that, you know, we can go away and everything will be just fine. So, you know, each culture has something different. You know, I have friends in South Africa that come from the Bushman culture, from the Kalahari, and they're hunter-gatherers. So they will literally run for 3 days at a time till they hunt down the animal. They cut up the animal. They put it in the skin. They drink a little bit of blood. And then they bring the entire animal back to the community. And they haven't eaten for several days, however many days it finally, you know, till they finally are able to get the animal to bring back to the community. And then the community comes around and shares that bounty. So it's completely unique to whatever culture it is, but it's that understanding that we are being given gifts by the earth and that we need to acknowledge those gifts in whatever way that culture brings forth that honoring and that gratitude.
That is so beautifully stated, because what we think of in our world, and the reason I'm going back into religion is because we think that we have to be a particular way with a religious mindset, and this is living a life of gratitude for what is already present in our lives, and really establishing a true relationship with the living world. That I think is such distinctly different. You know, it's not fear-based, it's gratitude-based.
Right. And I think, you know, that's where we've sort of gotten into the weeds a little bit because, you know, for those of us that had to go to church or, you know, our parents went to church or whatever it might be, you know, that's a completely different mindset. Like, I remember feeling like, geez, I was told I was born a sinner and I was born into sin. And I'm like, well, how is that even possible? And at the same time, I was told that I was created in God's image. So that really seemed like a complete, like it didn't make sense to me. And so this is a whole different understanding of our relationship with each other and with the world. And that's, it really is about just taking a moment to be grateful. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It just has to be that you acknowledge that you're alive and that you have these amazing opportunities to experience life every single day in your own unique way, and that you have these particular gifts that you bring to the world that are absolutely necessary.
That is so true, and it's such an important focal point of what we need to understand. We are a part of this beautiful ecosystem called Mother Earth. We're not separate from her. And so,
absolutely.
So, Kim, can you speak about the Voices of Wisdom, the work that you're doing with dialogues for different, groups, wherever you happen to be? Can you speak about that, please?
Sure. So, as I said, we just had Voices of Wisdom in Greensboro, North Carolina, and earlier this year we had Voices of Wisdom in Grand Junction. And each Voices of Wisdom, we bring in two elders from any number of backgrounds we've had. Maori, we've had Native American, we've had First Nations, and they each one is set around our sister organization, which is Sacred Fire Community, around a fire, a hearth they have in their community. So they're in seven countries right now. I'm not sure exactly how many fire keepers there are, but it's always set in the community where we have a Sacred Fire Community person or couple. In this particular case in Greensboro, it was a couple that was organizing it. And it really is around dialogue and sharing and storytelling. This was actually my first one in Greensboro. And to me, what I came away with is there were so many folks in the community, like all of us everywhere, who have... we've had challenges, we've had things in our life that have been really difficult. We may have seen some trauma, we may have experienced it firsthand, whatever it may be. And the storytelling aspect and the sharing aspect that these elders bring really allows for us to have a different perspective about what those challenges are. And in this particular case, it was really around the balance between feminine and masculine and the need for more feminine leadership in the world right now, particularly. And I don't think that's a big revelation. I think we, for those of us who are looking around and seeing what's happening is that the masculine side, and not just men, but the masculine that we all carry, has kind of gotten us to this place where we're in trouble. Not just with the climate, but, with so many different things. And so the idea that once we allow for that balance to start to shift and feminine leadership to start to become more prominent, to become a part of being really respected, it's very likely that we're going to see a shift in how we treat each other, how we interact with our world, and all of those different pieces. So each Voices of Wisdom is unique to the specific area that we're at, but also to the specific teachings that the elders bring. And then there's an opportunity for people to have question and answer, to spend time with the elders, be in community around a potluck, and then they come back together the next night. The elders go home in the morning, and then the community comes back and talks about their experiences and talks about some of the things that they took away from these events and how they can actually incorporate it into their lives. And that's the key is, we can all sit around something, we go to conferences and we have these amazing experiences, and then we come home and it's like, yay, and then it's gone, right?
And what do we do with it? Right.
Exactly. So this is really about practical, everyday applications that we can incorporate into our lives in a way that it actually makes it a difference. And I heard so many people talk about how deeply impacted they were and how, you know, they saw their experiences leading up to this moment as, you know, negative before, and it was just like a huge burden. And then they went, wait a minute, this is what's brought me to this moment, to who I am, and I can be better equipped to handle what comes next. And oh, by the way, if I see someone who's in the weeds or struggling, I can come to them and say, hey, I'm here for you. I've been through something similar. If my experience can be useful to you, then I'm more than happy to share that. Mm-hmm. And then we start to really build that community that I think we're all really hungry for, but we don't even know how to name it. We don't even know how to say, I want to be a part of something greater. I want to be a part of feeling like I matter, you
yes,
know?
Yes. You know, Kim, I would love to see what we could do to bring that to Michigan, you know, because
I would love to.
Well, then well, we're starting that conversation right now, darling. Actually, we started it at my kitchen table, I think, a couple months ago.
well, exactly. And I will say this. I know that there are going to be some opportunities for some elders that aren't it wouldn't necessarily be a voices of wisdom per se, but it would be part of that are coming to the states that are looking for those kinds of opportunities to share and to be in community. So I think that's a very doable.
Well, let's plan.
Let's be
in conversation about that, because as you know, from your own history in Michigan, that there is, you know, this is sacred native land. Michigan is a very powerful place in terms of history, and so many Michiganders, you know, don't even know that. And one elder that I know said, in Cheyenne, the word Michigan is Michigawa, which means land of the dragon. So this is recognized even in their language as a powerful place. So land of the dragon, Lake Michigan, Lake of the Dragon. You know, there's a power there. It's not mythology that we have, you know, foolishly made, you know, into stories. But these stories, as you said so eloquently, are about teaching us who we are in relation to everything. So how is it that you came to be a part of this wonderful organization?
Well, you know, as these things happen, I've been seeing how, and I think we talked a little bit about this when I saw you in September, mm-hmm. You know, these circles of completion, sometimes you don't know when they're going to come, quote, no pun intended, full circle. And then other times you sort of see their trajectory and how it will play out. And in this particular case, about 20 years ago, I started an organization called Journey to the Heart, and our primary focus was around an event that was held annually called The Gathering, where we brought Indigenous tribal leaders and elders and wisdom keepers together, and traditional healers. And it was back then, people, you know, there wasn't Skype, there wasn't GoToMeeting, there wasn't those kinds of things. So this opportunity for these Indigenous people to come together face to face was really, really valuable, because they could talk about things that were happening in their communities. And this was really before we were talking about climate change. You know, there were a few people, but they were really bringing that conversation forth, because as I mentioned earlier, they're overseeing about 80% of the biodiversity on the planet.
Yes, which is staggering. That they're holding all that for us.
Exactly. Yeah, we're interdependent. Like, you know, just because there's water, you know, the reason why Standing Rock was so critical is it wasn't just critical for the tribe, it was critical for all of the communities around Standing Rock. So, you know, you can say, well, geez, you know, these guys were trying to save their water. It's all of our water. It's not just, they don't own the water. They don't look at it as ownership. Right. So one of the elders that I brought in 2002 was a woman that I had heard about and was really just fascinated with, because she is a fierce protector of her own tribe, in New Zealand, Maori elder, but also had advocated for Indigenous people around the world. And her name is Pauline Tangiora. We've since developed an amazing relationship where she calls me her daughter and I call her my mother, which is really an extraordinary gift that I don't take lightly. Mm-hmm. And she came in 2002, and obviously our friendship has stayed strong throughout those years. And last year in 2018, she was honored with the Wisdom Treasure Award by the foundation. Mm. And the executive director was planning on leaving, and Pauline called up the president of the board, Keiko Cronin, and said, "You have to talk to Kim." And Keiko was like, "What do you mean talk to Kim? Talk to her about what?" She just said, "You have to talk to Kim." And so we connected last November, and this year, the day before my birthday, I was given the opportunity to come on board and be the new executive director for the foundation. So to me, I shuttered Journey to the Heart in 2008, along with another organization that was sort of a knock-on effect from Journey to the Heart, which was the Indigenous Land Rights Fund. And it was brutally hard for me to do that. It felt like a small, actually not small, a very large piece of my heart and my soul was missing because I had to do that. And it was financial. It happens, and it also was something where I felt very strongly that it was part of my mission and purpose for being here. And so this continuation of that circle really has been a blessing and a gift, and it's a great challenge and a great responsibility. But I'm just so grateful to be a part of that, and certainly Pauline was she was the puppeteer on that one. She was pulling the strings behind the scenes.
You know, it's great. Teachers know who the next leaders are. And so that was not by accident that you were sought out. So I thank you for being willing to step into that leadership position, because I think that you're extraordinarily gifted and so articulate in what you do. And you're the perfect woman for the job right now.
Oh, Elaine, that's really, that's too kind. Thank you.
Well,
I appreciate
true.
That very
it's
much.
True, darling. It's
no
true.
Pressure.
Well, it's not pressure. It's just an acknowledgement of what is already so. So
I know. I know.
So, how do you see Sacred Fire Foundation expanding? What are your dreams and hopes collectively for all of that? We have about 4 minutes left. So, whatever you can share with us, please.
Sure. Well, obviously, you know, with any business, with any organization, it's a challenge to continue from a financial perspective. So obviously, that is my number one goal, is to expand our opportunities as far as fundraising. I have very realistic goals, which I don't like being realistic. I dream big. And so it's very hard for me to sort of rein that in a little bit. But I have a very specific 5-year plan for growth. We're expanding our advisory council, our elders advisory council. We haven't made those announcements yet, but we're about to do that. So I don't want to share that on the air, despite the fact that I'd love to give you an exclusive. We're also looking at initiating a youth advisory council, because the elders have been really specific about saying those voices need to be at the table. And I also believe that very strongly. I don't think that children are our future or youth are our future. I think they are now. And while that may not be a very pretty grammatical sentence, we have to have those voices at the table. They bring a tremendous amount of wisdom. So I'm looking to also expand our grants program so we can give out more grants to organizations that are doing amazing work on the ground for all of us and supporting their culture. And we're looking to bring on another board member, at least one in the next year. And, you know, to continue to be able to do a really strong media program, which we've struggled with that a little bit. We've got a tremendous amount of interviews and footage and audio. So I'm hopeful that that can really be expanded in a good way so we can bring forth these messages. And podcast is in our near future. So I'm excited about that. So there are the continue with the events and to bring this message to more people and bring more people into having to being able to share in that community. So those are my sort of immediate in the next year goals.
Well, I think that, you know, what you just said is so important. And as we begin to understand our own responsibilities as human beings, regardless of our gender, regardless of our ethnicity, we are one species after all. So, and learning from wisdom keepers who have been so, so strong and standing firm for what we need to do. We need to listen. We really need to listen.
Absolutely.
So again, I want to make sure that people know that they can go to the Sacred Fire Foundation, and it's sacredfire.foundation. You don't have to have .org or anything after that. It's just sacred.
Well, yeah, I was talking to our webmaster the other day. I said, why does it come up sacredfire.foundation? And he said, oh, it's just apparently that's a new high-techy way of doing a .org. So, but
okay.
If you go to www.sacredfirefoundation.org, that will give you all of the information, and it will come up in your browser as sacredfire.foundation.
Okay, and Kim, how is it best for people to get in touch with you personally if they're interested in bringing a Wisdom Circle to where their location? How might they reach you?
Sure, they can reach me directly at K Langbecker, LANGBECKER, at sacredfirefoundation.org.
Mm. And I love what you have. Thank you for sharing that. And what I love the quote of Chief Orrin Lyons of Indigenous peoples hold the moral reserve of the world. And, you know, these incredible, he is Onondaga Chief Orrin Lyons, and these wisdom keepers who are, you know, they certainly are elders. They're our elders, and we want to be able to have the opportunity to listen to them, because, you know, we don't live forever, but the information lives forever. So I'm just so thrilled to have you on the show, Kim, and to call you a friend.
Thank you.
And
and likewise, Elaine, thank you.
Thank you. So again, this is Elaine Grohman. My guest today is Kim Langbecker of Sacred Fire Foundation. Please take a look at their website so that you can see the important work that Kim and others are helping to bring Indigenous wisdom back out into the open instead of being protected as it has needed to be for hundreds of years, because they are the leaders and they are the keepers of this wisdom that we so desperately need to be the key to unravel what the damage that we have done, so that we can be contributing to our world rather than taking from her. Thank you so much. This is Elaine Grohman for Empower Radio, Earth Wisdom Circles. You go out and make it a good day. This is your earth, after all, and your life.